The thoughts, views, and opinions you hear on this show are just that. Thoughts, views, and opinions from not only myself, but from my guests. So if you don't like them, disagree with them, or whatever the case may be, well, there's a simple solution to all that, and that's just stop listening. But if you care to partake in conversation, sit back, turn it up, and enjoy the show. Yeah, that. Welcome back to another episode of the Yeah That Podcast, hosted by yours truly, West Coast Roberto. Thank y'all for listening and for tuning in. Shout out to you, wherever you're listening to this from, whether it's your car, your boat, on the way to school,
the Yeah That Podcast,
at work or in the gym. Thank y'all. Make sure you rate the podcast on that platform. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Shout out to my special guest, Ms. Kaylee Grant. Good vibes only, y'all. Good vibes only. Hey. Y'all are doing well out there.
Make me swim, make me harder, make me lose my breath, make me water.
We're gonna learn some things about the ocean today, y'all.
Make me harder,
about some creatures of the ocean as well.
The Yeah That Podcast.
Normally, I could keep my cool, but tonight I'm whining.
We suffer some technical difficulties, but don't pay them no mind.
I'm a bee.
Still a good listen.
In a dangerous mood, can you match my timing?
Make sure you write the pod.
Telling me that you're really about it, watch her hide it.
Make sure you follow Kaylee, mermaid.kaylee.
So show me that you understand how like
sit back, turn it up, and enjoy the show.
Can you blow my mind?
Podcast.
Welcome back to the episode, to the podcast, and like I said the past two times, I was on my algorithm because I'm very interested in outer space and the ocean, because those are just two worlds that we haven't explored fully. And as I was on my search, there was a piece of content where it was an individual in some deep water approaching them, and she just pushed the shark off. And I was like, what in the world? So I had to click on it. I became a follower, and lo and behold, here we are, graced with her presence, Mermaid Kaylee, also known as Kaylee Grant, for appearing on the show today.
Yes, aloha everyone. I'm so excited to be here. And I love how you compared the ocean to outer space, because it is totally like that. It's just this like vast, still very unknown entity. And that is what I love about exploring it. You never know what's gonna happen anytime you go out there. So that's really cool.
That is another reason why I'm just so drawn to you and your content. Like, I was literally, before we got on here, was looking at every view you had. And then I went to the diving page and was looking at that. And I was like, this is just awesome. Like, so awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's an awesome career to have.
So before we dive right into that, pun intended, where are you from?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised actually outside of Philadelphia. So a lot of people would not expect that. I grew up going to a different coastline, the Jersey Shore. I grew up going to Wildwood, New Jersey. And yeah, a little bit different coastline than I'm used to now, but still definitely has my heart. I do love the East Coast. And I always loved the ocean, you know, I'm in my 30s, so I grew up when The Little Mermaid was out and Free Willy, and I just always thought the ocean was super cool. So my dad, you know, he would sort of foster that and took me on whale watches outside of Massachusetts. And so I grew up, I really loved whales, dolphins, you know, orca, especially killer whales were my favorite. So. But I didn't really get into my love of sharks until I moved to Hawaii. And at that time, I was fully surrounded by the ocean, so a little clearer water, a little warmer, so I got to dive in a lot. And the first dive that I went on scuba diving, I found a shark tooth in the sand. And I think that that was like a really cool omen of how important they were gonna be for me in my life. And then, you know, seeing a shark, continuing my diving journey, I just thought they were so beautiful, especially, you know, out in the deep open ocean, like you were talking about. The color of the water is like this royal blue, crystal clear. It's just so stunning. And then you have like a shark just kind of gracefully swimming through, cutting through the water. And it just sort of mesmerized me. And my love for them grew from that point forward.
Crazy. What brought you to Hawaii?
So I went to university at Temple University, which is right in Philly. And I went for ecotourism. So I kind of knew that I wanted to take people on adventures of some sort, but I didn't know exactly like what that was gonna look like. And so when I graduated, naturally wanting to get into a field like that, Hawaii sounded like a good idea. I was basically in my like early mid 20s and had maybe $3,000 and like two suitcases of stuff. So I just up and moved to Hawaii, which is like crazy for a lot of people to think, you know, making that leap away from your friends and family and just far away on your own can definitely be intimidating. But for me, it was the best decision that I ever made to get out of my hometown and, you know, go on this adventure. So I didn't really know how it was gonna pan out, how long I would be there, what life would look like. To be honest, I kind of thought Hawaii would be a blip on the radar of many more travels and moving around. I always really wanted to like keep it moving and travel, but Hawaii just really drew me in. It's such a special place and the spirit of Aloha is very prevalent. People are wonderful and the culture is great. So I just kind of stayed ever since.
Right on. What island are you on?
I lived much of my time here on Oahu. I've been in Hawaii for about 12 years. So about 8 years was over on Oahu. And then in 2020, I started my own business with my husband here on Big Island or the island of Hawaii. We live on the Kona side. And our company is called Kaimana Ocean Safari.
Right on. Yeah, I want to ask you, which I've been to Hawaii several times. So for you to say the said amount with two suitcases is crazy because Hawaii is so expensive. So it's like big leap of faith there. And I'm glad it worked out for you.
Yeah, looking back, I don't know how I did it. When I first got here, like I bought a scooter and that was my mode of transportation around Waikiki. And like just got a serving job and I was like diving, working as a dive master, you know, both things that don't pay extremely well. But, and I think with the economy nowadays, it would be a lot harder to make a move like that. But at the time it just worked out. And people also often say that Hawaii is one of those places, like it will either embrace you or chew you and spit you out. And the island, you know, I'm very grateful that I've been accepted to live here, and humbly so.
Right on. Yeah, it's all about like respecting the culture over there too. A lot of people, my time over there, because I'm in the military, so my time over there is a lot of people come over there and they don't really respect the natives and the girls. It's just like, oh, it's a party, but it's more than that. As long as you show the right respect, then you'll get it back. So that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah, absolutely. I always try to be like careful with my words, because though it is my home now, you know, I'm sort of a forever visitor. I'm not a native to Hawaii, anything like that. You'll never hear me say like, oh, I'm Hawaiian or anything. Like, no. And that's where people really get it wrong. And sometimes people do that and you're like, oh no, that's so cringe. But you know, you just have to respect the culture. Like you said, go do things how they do them here. It's a slower pace of life. Everyone is more respectful of each other. You know, you're not going to be like honking while you're driving and cutting people off. And coming from the East Coast, that slower way of life was definitely a learning curve for me, but it brings a lot of peace. So I'm grateful for that.
So for your first dive, do you remember your first dive? And if so, how was it? Like your first like deep dive in the water with sharks.
Okay, with sharks, yeah. So my first dive in the deeper open ocean with sharks was on the north shore of Oahu, where there are a lot of sharks. There's a lot of sharks, shark companies, and I would go on to work there for many years. And I just remember I was nervous. I was on a boat with like a bunch of coworkers, and you know, they're sharks, like we should have a degree of fear and respect for them. They're wild animals. So my heart was pumping for sure, but I was very excited. I've always been that adventurous person to like jump off of cliffs or go skydiving and move to another state and things like that. So I was being that person. I was the first person in the water behind the guide. And I remember slipping in and just being like, wow, like it's really not scary. And just feeling like pretty comfortable pretty quickly and like wanting to dive down and wanting to do more and things like that. And that's the thing that I think surprises a lot of people about sharks. Like, wow, they're just behaving like a fish in a way, you know, just swimming around. And I mean, they are fish, but doing their own thing. And just they're not looking at you like, hey, I see you as food. And you know, of course they're sharks and they're predators and things like bites do happen, but that's so incredibly rare, and their behavior 99% of the time is just like super chill. So that just surprised me so much, and that's kind of when I started to fall in love with them. And then when we got back on the boat, you know, we were talking about sharks and about that they're being killed at this extremely rapid rate of about 100 million sharks per year for their fins and shark fin soup. And I didn't even know what that was. I was like, what? How are these beautiful animals just being killed for this soup? It seems so senseless, just a small portion of their bodies. And they have such a slow reproductive rate that their populations can't come back from this. So learning about all that, it just really sparked something in me like, wow, I want to use my voice for them, show how awesome they are, try to get people to fall in love with them, and you know, use my platform and voice to save and protect them.
Right on, right on. So there was no, what's the phobia? Thalassophobia, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, people on the internet love thalassophobia. I think that's how you say it. But
yeah,
it large bodies of water can definitely freak people out, but I grew up swimming from a young age, so I feel like I'm just comfortable in the water. But okay. It is pretty crazy. Like when I take people on my tours, I'm always telling them, okay guys, you're about to get in water that's 6,000 feet deep or like 7,000 feet deep, because that alone is an experience. With or without an animal being present. I mean, obviously it's better when an animal is hanging out with us too, but with or without that, just being in that deep water and you comparing it to space, it just, it's really cool. Like the light rays just shine down as far as you can see, you know, and it's just vastness. And you know that the sea floor is like over a mile below you. It is kind of trippy to think about, you know?
Yeah, I seen the video talking about the thalassophobia, and it just made me cringe. Just the views that you post of you being down there, beautiful. But I can't imagine being there and then like seeing the rays of light, but not seeing anything with the possibility of something coming out. It's just, Oh, that's creepy to me.
Yeah, that's what gets a lot of people, is like the vastness and just the fact that so many things could be hiding anywhere and you just don't know. Yeah. So a lot of people ask me to go out there and film like dropping a rock and watching it fall. I don't know, that really, people love to see that. So it's interesting because for me, that's like my second home. I'm out there all the time.
Yeah.
So just these little experiments are fun. To me, I'm super comfortable there.
Yeah, there's a video that y'all had, and it was you had a tour group out there. And it was holding on to the boat, and a tiger shark was coming. And I can hear you in the background, like, okay, it's coming, it's not gonna harm you. But I don't know, it's just, ooh, I would love to do it, but I'd be that lady. Long story short, I'd be that lady.
That is okay. I actually love to take people out that have, you know, a little bit more fear about it, because it's so life changing for them. So they're my favorite people to take out. So you have to hit me up if you're over in Hawaii again.
Definitely. I know my wife would, but me, I'd probably be like, ugh, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. I would do it, but it takes to get out there. So with your studying of sharks, like, are you a marine biologist, or are you studying that?
So my company, we are able to support local research, but our main focus is tourism, ecotourism. But we are able to help with the local researchers. The local researchers for sharks out here are Shark Tagger Hawaii. So look them up on Instagram. They're really cool. Okay. And then also Hawaii Uncharted. They study our sharks here in Kona, and we can help them. We've helped them with tagging, and we also can take a picture of the dorsal fin of the shark, especially with like the oceanic white tips or the whale sharks. They have a unique pattern there, so the researchers can tell of different individuals. They ask us, you know, where they're sighted, at what date, time, which individuals are there, the sex, male or female. So we're able to support their research by just being out there, which is great. So a lot of times in science, they don't necessarily like have the funding to be out there every single day. Boats and things are expensive. So that's the awesome part about ecotourism, is people are paying us to take them out there. And while we're out there, we can gather data for the researchers. And then we also have a local cetacean research organization. It's called Cascadia Research, and they're researching our dolphins and whales. So all awesome organizations that people should check out.
So that's how you, I was going to ask you, so learning all the information from the sharks, and you just answered that question right there.
Yeah, I would say that also sharks are amazing teachers. They've taught me so much from, you know, personality wise, how to be like strong, confident, how to be humble. And then also just like how to interact with them, how to watch them and study them and understand them even better. So just time out there. That's what I always recommend for people. More time in the ocean if you want a career like this. Actually getting out there and you'll understand everything so much better. So
nice. What is it exactly that you do with sharks?
Sorry, can you repeat that? It was a little.
No worries. What is it about sharks that intrigued you, that has you so interested about them?
I think for me, just seeing how misunderstood they are. We can all relate to times that we were misunderstood in life, and they are so misunderstood. And what people don't really understand is how important they are in the environment, in the ecosystem. And they really help regulate so much in the ocean, keeping everything in balance and check, fish populations. And so they're so important for the health of the ocean. And we all rely on the ocean, whether we realize it or not. And so, yeah, just this misunderstanding about them and how rare negative shark encounters are, it just made me kind of fall in love with them. And then as I was kind of saying, they've taught me how to be like a more strong, confident person. They've also taught me a lot of humility, because when you're entering their home, you know, they're in charge. It's their home, their ocean. We're the visitors, we're the guests. So, and you have to stay humble to the fact that you're swimming with a wild animal and an apex predator. And as much experience as even I have, you know, you can't get cocky with that. You need to always remain humble, like, okay, like they are powerful. So I've just learned so many lessons from them, and I continue to. So that's just what I love about them.
That's awesome. Have you ever experienced or been around anybody who's been bitten or close to being bitten, anything?
I luckily have not been bitten. I hope that I never am. You know, that's a terrible thing for anyone to go through.
For sure.
I know people that have been bitten. Nothing like super crazy. Sorry, my dog is here. Mako, go lay down.
No worries.
A friend of mine, Mike Coots, he was surfing. So people should go check him out on Instagram too. But he was surfing and his leg was bitten off. And he still, to this day, with sharks.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's definitely been through it. Would be a really cool person to have on the podcast and hear his story. But he still, despite all of that, really loves sharks and respects them and swims with them. So, you know, they are wild animals, apex predators, and like, I would be silly to think that, you know, I could be immune to them or something just because I understand them better and like I've been safe thus far. Yeah, but most of the time these negative encounters happen to a lot of times surfers because you can't see in the water what's going on. A lot of times if you have your mask on, you have your fins and you're looking around and you're able to be aware, make eye contact and see their behavior, a lot of the times it's pretty preventable. You can see, okay, maybe they're being aggressive, or you can like handle yourself. You can actually see that there's a shark there. You can exit the water. Yeah. But a lot of times if you're surfing, you know, you don't know what's going on below you. So I always like to tell people before even entering the ocean, you can prevent a negative shark encounter by just avoiding water that's really murky. Avoiding water after a really heavy rainstorm. And that's because that could cause a lot of flooding. And here in Hawaii, that's something that happens in other places in the world, that when there's a lot of flooding, land animals can actually get swept out to sea. Then you may have decaying animals around. You know, don't swim or surf near a harbor mouth or near, if you see somebody fishing, even from shore, like those piers in California and kind of all of that. You don't, if you can avoid surfing there, that's bringing the sharks in. So there's a few things that we can do to prevent that before we even get in the water.
All noted, all noted. Everyone out there, make sure, listen. So out of all the sharks that you encountered and experienced, which one is the most intimidating you've been around?
Sorry, the most what?
Intimidating.
Oh, okay. Whew. It's so hard. Okay, so I'll go first to my most memorable interaction was when I was on Oahu off the coast about 12 miles in 2019. I actually just posted a little video of it today. It was a couple years ago, we saw a great white feeding on a dead whale. Mm. And of course that's memorable because it's a great white.
Yep.
You don't get the opportunity to swim with them without a cage like ever. Also in Hawaii, they're so extremely rare. They're really only here in the winter time in Hawaii, and they're typically staying deeper, only, you know, more rarely coming up to the surface because it is quite warm for them. So having that dead whale entice that shark to kind of come up and getting to see an animal feed like that, it was very amazing Nat Geo stuff. So that was probably my most memorable. As far as intimidating, I think I'm like, it's hard for me to say because I am, like I said, I always try to stay humble, but I have spent a lot of time with them, so I am like quite used to them. But even like the smallest shark can be intimidating. Like I've had little black tip reef sharks, you know, kind of like, sometimes the smaller sharks are crazier than the bigger sharks. I don't know why. They're just sometimes the smaller species. And of course the younger juvenile ones don't exactly know what's going on. So even the smaller sharks, they've moved around really erratically and been like, whoa, really keeping you on your toes. I've seen great whites in New Zealand that were like more actively hunting, not just feeding on a big free meal dead whale, something that's not moving. They were more like actively hunting and breaching and all of this stuff. So that was pretty intimidating. And we have this one tiger shark on the coast of Oahu on the North Shore named Kalihi. And she is just like, her demeanor is like more, I like to call it spicy. She is definitely a more confident, dominant shark. So she is always keeping us on our toes. Make are the fastest shark. I think they can reach speeds of like 46 miles per hour. They do move that fast too. They're like little torpedoes in the water. So it's so nuts. They're like here, then they're there, they're there, they're there, they're there. So you really have to be like on your toes with them. And they also look really intimidating because their teeth kind of like hang out outside of their face, which is obviously the scariest part about sharks usually. But the crazy thing about Mako's, every year I do a trip where I take people to swim with blue and Mako sharks in Mexico. And we are always trying not to scare the Mako away. So the Mako's, as like crazy as they can be, and they have all this insane speed and, you know, fearsome appearance, they can be so shy, and we're constantly trying not to scare them away. It's hard to really like capture. I need to make a video about this and try to capture it. Like, this is a great idea, because they just like, when they come close, and they just like get spooked really easily by things. And part of the reason, versus like the blue sharks that are just so derpy and like come right up to you and you just have to push them away and they keep coming up. But that's exactly why, is the Mako's are more intelligent and the blues, bless them, are less intelligent. So the Mako's, it's because they're able to regulate their body temperature. So yeah, they're able to get, you know, really warm, and their blood's moving and their brain is working. And yeah, they're just like really evaluating risk versus reward. You know, is this a safe place for me to be? I don't know. There's a lot of other predators here, meaning us, because they do look at us as equal apex predators. And this boat, I'm not sure, I'm gonna take off. So we're spending a lot of time trying to get them comfortable to stay near us. Yeah, so you'd be surprised about that species, actually.
Wow, yeah, I did not know that. You, like you said, you see them and those gnarly teeth and they're fast and intimidating. That is crazy to know. Crazy. They kind of reminds me of like a cat. Like, cats are like, they're just their own thing. They can be skittish, but then they can be like little jerks or whatever. That's cool though.
Yes, there are definitely, I mean, sharks in general aren't little puppy dogs, but there are some that are more like cats, you know, that kind of behavior, versus some of them, the more like derpy species are a little bit more like dogs.
So I was going to ask you if you swam in any other bodies of water, which you've said you swam in New Zealand and in Mexico. Out of the different bodies of water that you swam in, which one is your favorite?
I think my favorite is at home in Hawaii. I love getting to see the tiger sharks, and I know the specific individuals based on, you know, things with their appearance. And it's, I don't like to personify them because they're wild animals. Like, I'm not gonna be like Grizzly Man that thinks I'm accepted into the school or anything. They're totally wild animals, so I don't wanna personify them, but I've like come to know these specific sharks more, and you kind of become attached to them a little bit more, and you get to learn their different demeanors and different sort of personalities. And so I love to go back and see them every year. Our tiger season is like from August to November, approximately. And we see more tiger sharks during that time. So I'm really happy when they're coming back. One example, we have a tiger shark named Roxy, who is like very famous sort of on the north shore of Oahu. And she's got a broken jaw, definitely likely from a fishing incident. I've seen her come back to the area with nets on her, rope, wow, all kinds of stuff. She always gets into some trouble. And the human impacts on this particular shark are very evident. And this last year, she didn't come back for the season, and she usually comes back pretty much every year. It's not totally uncommon for them to not come back for a season, but it definitely makes you worry. It's like,
yeah,
is that shark finally, you know, gone? And it makes you sad. So we kind of get attached to these specific individuals and their stories and who they are. So
now, I know you've dove with a lot of whales as well. Now, just diving with a whale just seems insane. Sharks are like, all right, it's a shark, but whales are just big animals, just huge things. And polar opposites from sharks. If they aren't, please your input. But would you say it's, I would think it'd be more so intimidating with a huge whale, even though they're not out to get you. I'm not saying sharks are. Is a big difference between swimming with a shark vice a whale?
Yeah, so it's definitely always, you know, something you should be cautious of to swim with any wild marine animal. But the whales, like especially humpbacks, they're so intelligent and kind-hearted, kind-spirited animals. Like they really, I've never seen a whale be aggressive. And I've heard stories where people are doing things that are inappropriate and could cause the animal to be aggressive, but a whale wouldn't just look at you and be like, I want to hurt that thing. Like it would be, you know, more so, I've heard stories where divers are just too rapidly, aggressively approaching like a mom with her baby. And then in that situation, you know, or if the mom is just like, I don't want you humans around right now with the baby, and if they hit you with that pectoral fin, I mean, yeah, they could definitely kill you. They're massive, huge animals. So just their size is what is, you know, potentially dangerous. But they're so, like I said, beautiful. They're so intelligent. Like you can see the intelligence just behind their eyes. And they're so sweet. Like more than anything, they really just like to play. So they're amazing animals. Even orcas, you know, there hasn't really been an attack on a human in the wild. And I have been able to swim with them before in the wild and never felt any sort of aggression or anything like that. An interesting story that people can actually look up on YouTube. This is always pretty interesting. It's pilot whales, when people are acting inappropriately, have been recorded actually grabbing people and bringing them down.
Really?
So if you type in like on YouTube, pilot whale, yeah, type in pilot whale, Kona, Hawaii, you'll see what I mean. But you, again, it's always really human cause. Like you'll see why that whale did that. These people, the pilot whales are resting. They're doing a behavior we call logging, where they're just sitting still. They kind of look like a log on the surface. They're just resting. And this woman goes up and starts touching them. And you know, you don't know if that animal wants to be touched. Clearly it didn't. And like they grabbed her and kind of drug her down like 50 feet or something, and they let her go. But there's some species that are, you know, you'd be more worried about than others. And that is one of them. Pilot whales, I think I would be, are one of the whales, toothed whale species I'd be the most worried about.
Wow, okay. I've seen you posted, it was either on your page or your diving page, where it was pilot whales, it looked like they were all standing underwater and just kind of like just stagnant. And is that what you're referring to with the logging?
Usually they could be resting there too, but usually the logging is when they're sort of horizontal in the water and just sitting. What you're referring to, like being vertical,
yes,
is they're spy hopping. So that's really cool. They'll rest vertically as well, but they'll actually lift their heads up out of the water and see what's going on in the surface and come back down. So I always think that's really cool because it kind of shows that they're just as curious about us as we are about them sometimes. You know, they're people watching while we're whale watching. So spy hopping is some of my favorite behavior to see with whales.
That's cool. When I used to live in Washington State, so we went whale watching. And there was one instance where a buddy of mine, he was kayak fishing and he was off the coast, and a pod of orcas just popped up by him. And he told me the story and I was like, well, what did you do? He's like, first I shit my pants and I got the hell out of there. I was like, I would have did the same thing. Just big old things just popping up beside you. Orcas too, like you said, orcas get a bad rap, but there's not really reports of them attacking.
Yeah, I guess some of them kind of this last year started retaliating on boats. And I call it retaliating because I think there was some negative interaction between the pod and the boats. Like maybe some of the whales were hurt by the boats. So then the orcas actually started like hitting the boats and trying to sink them. Wow. I don't know too much about that situation, but that is like the first time I've really heard about that. And it was just like this last year in like Portugal or somewhere.
Wow.
But for the most part, like, yeah, orcas are not interested in hunting or hurting humans. They're just such skilled hunters and have taken down everything from like a great white shark to a whale to everything in between. So they just, you know, they get so much respect and they're so intelligent and they are very social with their families and they travel such long distances even every single day. And so when people do put them in captivity, they just like a human would, if we were stuck in a jail cell 24/7, you know, they go a little crazy. So in that situation, they have definitely not behaved nicely.
Yeah. Are you referring to Blackfish, the documentary?
Yes. So they have hurt humans and even them in captivity. And that to me, like, oh my gosh, terrible, horrifying, such a sad story. But coming from the animal's perspective, like I could see why that would trigger that potentially. Yeah. And yeah, I'm just like anti-captivity. When I was young, my dad took me to SeaWorld because I loved whales so much and loved orca. And we didn't know, I feel like at that time, how bad it was versus now. Like now I would never go to something like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I was all about SeaWorld and all that because I'm in my 30s as well. And I think Blackfish is like, wow, yeah. And then you think about it. And then I believe you posted the video of like the sharks that are in captivity at aquariums with their dorsal fins or their fins that are like kind of bow in because hitting it and stuff.
Yeah, it's always hard. You know, I'm not somebody that's like super anti zoos or aquariums. Like I typically prefer not to go, but at the same time, I think that they can be amazing for like children, getting them interested and different, you know, marine life or animals in general. But I think that there are certain species that, and certain situations where it just shouldn't be like done. I think with like larger shark species and dolphins and whales and things should just not be in captivity. And you know, maybe like fish, they are have a better survival rate in these tanks and they don't look as degraded and like, you know, they don't go they're not as intelligent, so they're not going like as crazy. So yeah, it's a fine line. And of course, if there's a way to like rescue an animal and rehabilitate them and put them back in the wild, that's great. But yeah, so I'm not fully anti, but in a lot of situations, it's kind of not nice. And for the sharks with the larger species, it's kind of the same thing. They're in the wild, they actively are hunting. So they're getting a lot of like behavioral enrichment out in the wild. There's a lot for them to see and a lot for them to do, and they're traveling far distances. And when they're stuck in this like tank, a lot of them are also circular shaped. So they did a study and like 90% of the time, the animals just swim in the same direction. So that's obviously causing their fins to like form deformities because they're not gonna like turn around to way, and they're mostly circular shaped. So they just don't look good. They're like,
That's nuts. That's nuts. I know a lot of like the facilities that have those animals in captivity, they say, oh, it's because they wouldn't do well releasing the wild and all that stuff. What are your thoughts on that? I just think it's trying to keep it in captivity for the money and all that stuff. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's probably a case by case basis. I'm sure there are definitely some animals that really wouldn't be able to be released. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind that these facilities are income driven. And so they want to make money and these animals are the way for them to do so. So I don't think that they're always really pushing to get them released.
Right. What are your thoughts on, so the shark that washed up on shore in Var in February? So in North Carolina, close to where I'm at, in the last 7 weeks, we've had 7 whales wash up on shore in the Outer Banks. What do you think the cause is for that?
Wow, that's so interesting. Well, with the shark in Florida, I believe it was likely due to fishing. That's typically why sharks are killed. They're killed as bycatch a lot of times. So sometimes these huge, and I'm talking huge operations, like I'm not coming at fishermen that are just out with their families doing like small time catching food for themselves. Like that's obviously not making as big of an impact. But these very huge operations where you have trawling or longlining, and they're basically taking a lot of things out of the ocean indiscriminately, which is called bycatch, not even what they're targeting. And so a lot of the times this bycatch is killed in the process of catching it, because it's very traumatizing to these animals to be fighting for their lives on this line. And with sharks, they build up lactic acid. Sometimes their jaws break with the fishing hook, or sometimes they ingest the hook and it could mess with their organs. So there's a lot of different things that can go wrong with a shark fighting on a fishing line. And a lot of times, many species have a very high post-mortality rate. So after they're cut free off the line, a fisherman may see them swim away, and they look like they're swimming away pretty strong, but they'll actually die later just from these injuries over time. So, and then that shark in Florida that washed up, it did have a hook on its jaw. Mm-hmm. So that's probably what happened, especially because there wasn't a lot of other like injuries present besides that hook. So that would be like my best guess. And I know the plight of sharks in general is typically fishing. So with the whales, I haven't heard about that particular instance. I'm definitely going to look it up after we get off the call. But a lot of times with whales, there could be a variety of reasons. Usually if it's like sort of a mass stranding, that many whales, scientists are still learning why whales are doing this. So there's not like one exact be all end all cause for that. But I know something that is an issue for these guys is sonar with like military operations. They're very sensitive to sounds. That's how they communicate with one another. And that can really mess them up, get them disoriented, and they end up stranding, especially when you see a lot of them like that. So I know that there's kind of connections here in Hawaii with, you know, when our military work goes on, and I don't know too much about that, but whatever they need to do with the sonar, and then whales, you know, being up stranded, so.
Yeah, because they have Pearl Harbor's over there, the joint's right there. And then they do RIMPAC every year with the Hawaii Nation War Games. I could see that. And yeah, for the whales I'm referring to, look it up, because we had one a week or two ago washed up on the Outer Banks shore, and it was the seventh whale in the last 7 weeks. So it's kind of crazy. It's pretty frequent, so it's concerning as well.
Yeah, absolutely terrible. I wish there was, you know, unfortunately, yeah. A lot of times our military operation doesn't really think about the wildlife that's going on around. And yeah, that's a shame. I wish there was better ways to do that.
I know, the best way to help out sharks is to eat little or no seafood, or be mindful of what you're eating. Do you personally eat seafood?
Typically only if my husband catches it. He is a spear fisherman, so I am in support of spear fishing.
Nice.
Spear fishing is an awesome way to go out and get your own seafood. If you're able to. I know that that's the hard part, is I always try to avoid preaching to people what to do with their diets, but still give the information, so it's tricky. But I am in support of spearfishing if you're able to, if you live on a coastline, because it's so selective. Like I remember one time, I'll go in with my husband so I can watch the sharks and have his back while he can fish. And we saw this one tuna, and it like had still like a hook in its mouth with a line. And I was like, oh shoot, that one, because it's already like messed up. Like that's how selective you can be with it, not, you know, just aimlessly kind of throwing your line and you don't know what you're going to catch. So anything, if you're fishing and you can really reduce bycatch and you're just taking what you're going to eat, I mean, that's amazing. But otherwise, I try to stay clear of it. There are times where I'm in really remote places where it's pretty much the only protein available, like French Polynesia, a lot of these Polynesian islands. But in those situations, you can support the small local fishermen, and they are very good about letting the sharks go and not interested in catching sharks. In French Polynesia specifically, it's a shark sanctuary. So yeah, if you kind of understand where you're at, the rules, the laws, supporting local, supporting small, I think that's a great way to start. And if you can be completely vegan and go without, then that's amazing too. My diet is primarily vegetarian, and I try to only support you know, when my husband's going out and fishing and things like that. But I think it's awesome even when people are supporting local farmers and smaller operations. Yeah. Like, I'm totally open to that.
Are you familiar with the latest study we're seeing, the forever chemicals in seafood?
Like microplastic and stuff?
Yeah, so like the PFAs and stuff that they have recently did.
Maybe not the most recent. I want to hear what you have to say.
So Dartmouth did a study recently, and come to find out there's certain seafoods that are packed with forever chemicals, and that seafood being shrimp and lobsters, and they're packed with PFA compounds that span from 1.74 nanograms to 3.3 nanograms. And the higher the nanogram count, the more risk, or more likely the risk of liver disorder or cancers. Seafood is less than 1 gram, but they're starting to come out with tighter guidelines in regards to consumption levels of seafood, just like how they did with like mercury levels and stuff similar to that. I guess the FDA or whatever, they're about to come out with tighter seafood guidelines in regards to PFAs and forever chemicals. I wasn't sure if you had heard about that.
I definitely have heard a lot about chemicals and plastics in our seafood because it's sort of everywhere. So at this point, we're consuming it.
Yeah,
that's super interesting. I've heard a little bit more about the forever chemicals. There's some like sort of energy drink that just got popped, like this. It's called,
really?
Like Prime energy drink.
Oh my gosh! Of course.
But you gotta watch, because they just came out and they said that their levels of those forever chemicals, like you said, are so incredibly high that it's like, I don't know, they're really under scrutiny right now. So yeah, super interesting. You know, like, I think it's awesome that this information is coming out, because a lot of people are trying to like grow their own food and be more sustainable. And yeah, shrimp and trawling for shrimp is not sustainable whatsoever. So hopefully this is a way to steer people away from that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I used to love shrimp, but now I'm allergic to, I don't know, maybe still the PFAs.
Well, it works out for you.
It does. I know we mentioned French Polynesia. I just read something where a lot of South Pacific nations are dolphins and whales legal persons. I don't know if you heard that.
Yes, I heard that. I think it was Tonga that was starting it. But yes, in the South Pacific, I'm actually going there for some trips and bringing some people out. And I do have a few spaces left if anybody listening wants to reach out. But we're going to the Cook Islands and French Polynesia to do some whale tours. The whales are so respected there. And I think French Polynesia and just like the Pacific Islands all over, they have they're doing ecotourism really well. Especially like Tonga, they have like kind of rules for the whales where you can't behave in certain ways. You have like a time limit that you can stay with them and things like that, and how many people can be in the water. So it's just like they're treating them with a lot of respect, but also using that ecotourism to boost their economies and have people fall in love with these animals and then want to, you know, save and protect them. So I think it's, yeah, really amazing what they're doing. And it's so like high in contrast to other places in the world. You know, they still allow whaling. You know, in Japan, they're still whaling.
Of course.
In Northern Europe, they still do like some whaling activity. So it's definitely a contrast, and I think Polynesia is just doing it right. So
yeah, you hit them right on the head. Like the countries were Tonga, French Polynesia, Cook Islands, and New Zealand drew up a treaty recognizing the animals' rights.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Like being in Hawaii, we're closer to these places. So it's only like a 6-hour flight. It takes me just as long to get to Tahiti as it does to California. So we find ourselves going there quite often, and they're just so gorgeous and so beautiful.
Yes, you got the ups. You know how many people want to go to Tahiti, and it's just right there for you.
Just close. Yeah, close by. And like New Zealand is amazing. And they had like one thing that was really cool about New Zealand too. We were driving around and all of their animal agriculture is like fields and outdoors. Like vast fields that are beautiful that these animals are hanging out. Like, I don't think they have any type of factory animal agriculture. So it's like everything's really being like treated with respect there, you know, and it's just a different way of life. It's really cool. It's different than what we see like in America on the mainland.
Nice. You know? That is awesome. Yeah, that's one of the places in the world I want to go to is New Zealand. I just hear so much great things about it. I got to go there.
It is very cool. And our dollar is like goes pretty far down there right now. So it's a good time to go.
I've already had you. We've been fighting with the program time. I appreciate you taking the time out to educate the listeners on, you know, the misconception that sharks have, what the ocean has. And if you would please plug yourself, this floor is yours.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining in. You can find me on pretty much all of the platforms at mermaid.kaylee. And if you want to come dive with me, my website is kaimanaoceansafari.com.
And I will have everything in the show notes. So if you're interested in reaching out to Kaylee, all you got to do is go down to the show notes and the link will be right there. But other than that, I've held Miss Kaylee too long now. And I appreciate you so much. And until the next episode, this is Homie West Coast Rob signing out.
The Yeah Dad Podcast.